Hey, this is Will Foxley. Welcome to the Compass Podcast. Excited today to be joined by Adam. We're going to be talking all about Bitcoin mining, upstream data where he does business ops, and then also about the mining council that kind of kicked off this week with Elon Musk and Michael Saylor, kind of diving into that topic and what it looks like from the larger perspective in Bitcoin mining.
I hope that you enjoy this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass Podcast is presented commercial free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard to find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show.
So excited to have you on the show, Adam.
Hey, excited to be here. I was glad you reached out. And you're in Colorado, right? You can't be too far.
Yeah. I think we're just like probably down the street, not to dox each other, but pretty close to me.
It's a shame we're not outside today, man. It's beautiful. So no, I'm happy to be on the show. And you know, I love talking Bitcoin mining. And I think what you guys are doing at Compass is pretty cool. I've had a lot of people, you know, in my own consultations that I do with CoinBeast, and even just talking to guys that are in the oil and gas industry, like Compass, you know, people are starting to know about your guys' operation and people are looking into your hosting. And there's just a lot of excitement around Bitcoin in general and Bitcoin mining. I'm sure you deal with it with a lot of the mania that's out there and a lot of the excitement that is coming to the table every day.
Yeah, no, it's been nuts. Like the last 90 days has, just like you said before the show, just been insane. The last 2 months since I've been at Compass, even more so. And I feel like with Elon Musk kind of dipping his toe into Bitcoin and kind of nuking the space over the last 3 weeks, like it's only getting worse. And we'll get to that topic a little bit more about this so-called Bitcoin Mining Council. Excited for your take on that. But I want to talk really quickly about Colorado and Bitcoin mining. Just as you're from the area, are you a native to Colorado? Did you move here recently? And then can you tell us a little bit about the Colorado Bitcoin mining scene?
Well, no, I'm a native to Colorado. You know, first of all, I was born here and raised here. I lived here for most of my life. During college, I lived in other states, and then I lived abroad at one point as well. But you know, in terms of the Bitcoin mining scene here in Colorado, you know, what I'm aware of more so is the oil and gas scene in Colorado, right? Like I more interact with the oil and gas scene than I do the Bitcoin mining scene. And upstream data, you know, we're much more of an oil and gas company than we are a Bitcoin mining company. I think that, you know, our lead engineer, our lead designer is a heavy oil and gas, you know, he's a petroleum engineer. So, you know, I'm much more, I guess, involved in the oil and gas side of things. But what I do know about kind of the Bitcoin community here in Colorado is that it's quite strong. You know, I think during New Year's, there was maybe 20 people. Some people flew in, but 20 people, we all met up in the mountains and, you know, had a New Year's party together, a bunch of Bitcoiners. And there's a strong Bitcoin community here in Colorado. You'd know about mining in Colorado more than I would, I'm sure. Because, you know, the guys I talk to, the guys that I'm talking to that are mining somewhere in the DJ Basin, and you know, they're mitigating their gas because Colorado has some of the strictest natural gas like flaring restrictions in the United States. Certainly, you know, west of the Mississippi, where the states have the ability to regulate, and you know, I they have a good argument because the majority of the oil and gas plays in Colorado are pretty near to Denver and pretty near to infrastructure. And so, if you're not putting in a pipeline, you're either just being kind of cheap or you're being a lazy ass. Like it's usually not too big of a deal to you know, get your gas to market here in Colorado. Whereas you got places like Wyoming or North Dakota, you know, down in Texas, where there's wells that are just like they're stranded, they're out in the middle of nowhere, and so there's just no hope of them ever getting access. So you tell me. I mean, what's the Bitcoin mining scene like in Colorado? I'm curious to know.
Well, I'm pretty new to the Bitcoin mining space in the sense that like the infrastructural side of things. So previously, I did tech reporting at CoinDesk. So that was kind of my way into Bitcoin mining, was like the protocol side. So anything to do with how the transactions are actually settling. And so I'm very interested in that space. And that's why that was a big reason for kind of moving into Compass itself. From what I've seen so far is there is like some mining in the area, but it's just kind of more expensive. So Colorado Springs, the second largest city in the state, has at least one facility. I think Frontier is down there. But the power down there is coal, and it's not necessarily much cheaper than other places. You're definitely,
I was going to say that they can't be getting much cheaper than probably 7 cents, right? Like,
yeah.
And that would be kind of surprising to me. So,
yeah. And it's one utility, so it's not like a great situation. Like, I think you're going to find better rates in Texas or somewhere else in the States. And then I know that Riot has like a facility or a small, well, most of their facilities are in New York, but they have a head office in Castle Rock, which is always shocking to me because Castle Rock is like a place to stop and shop or whatever. But
yeah, that is kind of surprising to me too. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So like their headquarters are there. And I think there is one mining facility in Castle Rock. I'm not sure who's in that facility. I don't think it's Riot.
It's interesting because I just bought a bunch of Bitcoin miners off of some guy that went either to jail for down in Colorado Springs. He was using exhaust from the miners. Yeah, he was using the exhaust from the miners to, you know, to heat his marijuana grow house.
Very Coloradan.
Yeah, very Coloradan. Very, you know, very ingenuitive and innovative. And it's certainly a good idea. Like, I think heat recapture. Yeah. You know, why not go for it? But apparently he grew too many cannabis plants. And so like he went over his limit. And so, yeah, he ran into some trouble. So we picked up all of his miners just on a chance encounter with the guy who actually ended up, you know, getting possession of them because, yeah, one way or another. So I do know that, like, certainly, you know, I've always thought about maybe mining up in Leadville. You know, I've been keeping an eye out on land all over from, you know, Wyoming and Colorado as well. And
there is
something about the fact that, you know, this high altitude, the really dry air, certainly if you go up to like Leadville where it's, you know, 9,000 feet or something, like, you're not even going to get really hot days in the summer. Even when it's hot in Denver, it's not going to be all that hot up there. And so it's just a matter of, you know, I would need to install solar or something, right? I need to have an off-grid solution because you can't tap into the utilities in those rural mountain towns and such, because you'll just destroy their market by coming in mining. and then they'll get together and kick you out real fucking quick. Yeah. They'll kick you out real quick. So
yeah, no, it's so weird because when you're driving around Colorado, or at least if you're a hiker especially, like, you will come across just tons of abandoned mining equipment from the turn of the century, like, all over the place, especially in the Springs, which was connected to mining town, Cripple Creek on the other side of Pikes Peak. And it's like, that's just the legacy for like people growing up in Colorado. It's like a mining state. And now we have like this digital gold rush, and it's kind of there. Like, there's some, like, there's a lot of Bitcoin companies, like you said, or crypto companies, I should say, in general, like in general in the Denver area, but Bitcoin mining hasn't taken off as much as I'd like to see it grow. But Upstream Data is kind of in a place to help along with that. So can you tell us a little bit about what your company does and why Compass subscribers should work with you guys to mine Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, I think it only even makes sense. First of all, you know, it's not my company; it's Steve Barber's company. But you know, I'm working for them, and I was a customer of theirs to start. So that's how I met Upstream Data, and how I got involved with them is I was looking for somebody to build a data center, essentially a structure that could house a bunch of Bitcoin computers, and you know, for that could survive the oil field. And ideally be, you know, utilized on site and at least relatively easy enough to maintain that you wouldn't need some, you know, you wouldn't need a programmer or some expert or something, right? I mean, early on, I didn't really understand much about Bitcoin mining. And so, and I inevitably stumbled into, you know, found Upstream Data's website and shot him an email, got really excited, got on the phone with Steve and was a customer. And now what I do, you know, working with them, and I think it's, you know, I'm really an appropriate guy for my position considering I was a customer, because I've ran through all of these variables and these numbers and these decisions a million times already before personally, you know, before I was in kind of the selling role, right? Before I was on the other side of the table. And so, you know, I have a really good understanding of a lot of the nuance that somebody's going to ask about and really be concerned about when it comes to investing in this process. And so when it comes to dealing with, you know, upstream oil and gas producers, which is who I talk with all day, every day, right? It's like, I'm not dealing with Bitcoin miners necessarily, really. Like, I'm dealing with oil and gas producers who have either waste gas, right, associated gas, or they have stranded gas wells that are shut in, and they're either waiting for a better market to, you know, go and inevitably bring that gas to market, or they're you know, looking to wait for a better gas market so that they can sell them to somebody who's ambitious to build out midstream or whatever. But either way, they're all taking a look at Bitcoin mining now, because ultimately it's just the optionality of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin network, as a means to sell electricity or to sell energy is getting realized, right? There's an enlightenment period happening right now. This period of enlightenment where oil and gas producers are realizing, hey, we don't just, you know, the world's realizing, hey, we it's not just humans that we can sell electricity to now. It's also this autonomous network. Like, we can sell electricity to that and get a fair rate. Like, and there's no other entity on the other side of that trade. It's not like a Bitcoin buy where somebody's selling in order for you to buy. This is purely an autonomous reward that was programmed 12 years ago to happen today. Like, so it's very weird, right? It's like something we could have never really even imagined, or we certainly, you know, oil and gas producers weren't laying in bed at night just wishing they could sell their, you know, their oil and gas to the internet. Like, but all of a sudden it happened and they're realizing like, hey, this is an important tool to take a serious look at, and it's worth running the numbers. It's worth learning about what this is all about. And we're right at that moment right now. So like what I'm doing, you know, every day is helping these guys kind of scale projects based upon, you know, their gas flow rates. A lot of them have what I would call seemingly endless amounts of gas, meaning they can start with a pilot project pretty much as big as they're comfortable with, as much power as they're comfortable generating, because they have freaking endless amounts of gas that they're burning and wasting. And so what they're doing right now is they're getting their feet wet, and they're jumping in. They're starting with pilot projects, but, you know, we're building pilot projects for guys. And, you know, some of the pilot projects, it may sound like a small operation, but like they're pretty big because of how much gas they have in total. Like, for them to actually make a serious commitment to get some numbers that they can actually extrapolate, they're coming in with pretty significant investment or going to generate a significant amount of power. But like, I don't think people realize how much gas there is out there, how much gas gets wasted every day. I mean, it's like a really hard, it's a very difficult volume to even like understand, like to comprehend. But we're going to start seeing it, because we're going to start seeing, you know, guys that have a megawatt of power getting generated on all, you know, every well on a well pad. And I'm like, yeah, they don't have a facility with 100 megawatts, but they've got like 65 megawatts spread out over three different oil basins, right? And so really distributed. And I'm just I just walk through it with them, and I tell them, you know, I give them a lot of advice, do a lot of handholding, educate them a lot on what they're doing and why we think, you know, it should work this way, and why we build for, you know, why we build the way we build and why we do what we do. And then, you know, we bid them a quote, right? And they're shopping around. They're talking to the other companies that are, you know, doing what we're doing, other guys that are offering this. And, you know, a lot of guys are wanting to go with us because they, you know, I think we've got a lot of experience and we have a great product, right? The hash huts that Steve has designed, his, you know, current iteration is just, it's a slick oil field structure and really durable. So, you know, thing sells itself, and the numbers sell themselves. Bitcoin sells itself. It's just a matter of educating, right? It's awareness. Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I see these producers get excited. Like they get excited about producing more hydrocarbons, like producing oil and gas now. Like, because they've been just getting beaten down and cornered by regulators and everyone, right? I mean, in the court of public opinion, they've been vilified, and so I mean, they're getting nickel and dimed everywhere. And this is finally like something came around that actually gives them like a little bit of power back, and like gives them a little bit of pop in their step. And I see it, like I hear it in their voice, and they get excited. And they know where there's so much energy that can't be, you know, efficiently or economically brought to market right now. And so they really understand the potential opportunity. But it's going to take a ton of capital. It's going to take a ton of time. And the ASIC industry needs to mature, you know, tenfold before this is really, you know, before this is really serious, before this is really at scale, and it can, and we can actually make like a significant dent in the amount of total waste gas that, you know, gets burned or vented every day. Like, before we're going to make a dent in that, like, we need a lot of growth and investment in this space first. So it's early. It feels like we just like top of the first inning. Even though it might seem like Bitcoin, it's really late. We're at, you know, touch $60,000 or whatever, which I could completely understand. But from where I'm sitting, I feel like it's the very beginning, like the starting pistol just fired.
So you mentioned like the amount of natural gas that's wasted is like a little bit hard to measure, like hard to understand. And I'm curious like about that specifically, like the growth, if you can like try to maybe quantify that a little bit for us, even in just like rough percentages, like how much compared to like, let's say 2 years ago, how much has the amount of hash rate that comes from flared gas grown in terms of like multiples or percentages? And like looking forward 5 years, assuming we see continued maturation of the ASIC industry, how large of a percentage of like global hash rate would you see as reasonable to come from flared gas?
So I'd say to your first point, in terms of like what kind of growth have we seen in terms of mining in the oil field. I'd say we've seen significant, like likely 10x growth from 2018 to now, right? Like in the last,
it was
2018, 2017 was really nascent and maybe a couple of guys were tinkering with it. Steve Barber, you know, founder of Upstream Data being one of them. And, you know, really 2018, 2019 guys were, you know, figuring out, I think Steve had mentioned this the other day where like, I think our first like inbound cold call where somebody called us and just like ordered a data center from us, ordered a Bitcoin mine was in 2019. And so, and then certainly the, you know, last quarter of 2020 into now, I mean, it's been just like, you know, like we just started pulling like 5 and 6 G's, you know, I mean, it's just like it takes your breath away a little bit in terms of how much inbound interest and how much, really how many people are just looking to communicate with you and get some information right from us. And so it's, you know, that's really what I deal with on a daily basis. Now, in terms of percentages, in terms of like what share of all hash rate, I don't know. It's gotta be really small. Just because hash rate's massive right now. What are we at, like 160 exahashes? I mean, I would say that maybe a couple exahashes are in the oil field right now, but I would be surprised if it was over 10, like over 5 or 7% even right now. Because hydroelectric, like some of those facilities that already have permanent like housing infrastructure, you know, for housing these miners and things like, you know, out in the oil field, this is applicable all over the place and really like, you know, phenomenal place and position to be in if you're the oil and gas producer to mine Bitcoin. But it's a little bit more nuanced to get set up. And considering you have to generate power, there's obviously a larger upfront capital cost, even though you get right that decreased marginal cost of electricity. It's essentially free. And so I think that we're going to see significant growth because ultimately the existing hash rate is going to have to compete with new hash rate. And if new hash rate is starting in the oil field, existing hash rate is going to have to press their advantage of having newer machines, right? Which is what Marathon, what we see these big guys doing, right? Is they're buying up like S19 Pros that they can't even plug in. Like they don't even have the friggin' energy capacity because they can't afford for their competition to have them. Well, when everyone starts playing with the same toys, when miners become commoditized, they're going to get shouldered out by guys that go seek energy off grid. And so, you know, the guys like Marathon, they're going to have to adapt. In my opinion, I mean, they're not going to last the decade if they don't adapt, because I know who they're going to have to compete with. And I know like what their power cost is of the people they're going to have to compete with, and they can't compete. Like they just can't. And so, you know, I think that we're so early right now, it's like tough to even measure that. Now, this is the part, Zach, this is the measurement that kind of gets a little bit, this is what gets me really bullish is in order for even a significant percentage of that gas, we'll just even talk about the U.S. for a significant percentage of the gas that gets wasted every day in the U.S. To be consumed to mine Bitcoin. Bitcoin's price has got to be north of $1 million. I mean, for just the U.S., maybe north of like $750,000 million. Certainly after the next halving, right? Because there's that much gas that for that next person to come on and start mining, it's gonna need to be really lucrative. We're talking about hundreds of exahashes of potential hash rate, right, in the form of natural gas, and so. It's early. That's insane. It's really early. Yeah. I don't think people realize how much Bitcoin, like how much growth Bitcoin has left. If they're talking about its energy usage now, I'm just saying like, just wait. Like I think it's going to be, I mean, I'm the guy that's saying, you know, in 15, 20 years, I think that Bitcoin will be the primary electricity consumption market in the world. Right. I think that it'll consume more electricity than humans, you know, do.
I agree 100%. It's crazy. You hear people like whine about Bitcoin's energy consumption in terms of like its scale to date. And I just want to tell them, like, you have it great right now. Like, miners can't find enough rack space. They can't get their hands on ASICs fast enough. So if they could, you'd be losing your mind with how much energy Bitcoin miners consume.
Well, yeah. It's the two minds of, you know, we see it as a feature. They see it as a bug. And, you know, that's the argument that's going to battle right now, right? That's even the whole argument around this council thing is the fact of, you know, there's some people that are like, hey, Bitcoin's energy consumption is a feature. Some people claim that any energy consumption is immoral or bad and destroys the earth. And then there's these people in the middle that are like confused and like, they don't want the planet to die but they don't really know it's like, it's just obfuscation all the way through. And it's not, you know, it's not like Bitcoin's scarcity or Bitcoin's immutability where you can have a quick meme where it's like, you know, an ATM that says, you know, account frozen for fraud. And then you could say like, you know, nobody can freeze your Bitcoin. Like you can give that message of immutability like that, right? But to convey how Bitcoin impacts energy production and that in turn the environmental impact of that impact of that influence, I guess, is too nuanced, and you have to dive deep into what are we talking about when we talk about environmental impact, right? What are we just simply talking about carbon emissions? Are we talking about, like, you know, true physical terraforming, right? Like actually reshaping the earth, things like mining, like you know, like rare earth minerals do and things like that. I mean, like, what are we talking about? And so there's just all this nuance that has to happen, and it can't be, you know, that FUD can't be swatted with just a quick meme. So that's why this is going to stick around. And that's why it's like this really tough to endure, frustrating kind of argument going on out there, right? These disagreements, because it's too nuanced and hardly anybody's on the same page. It's awkward right now.
I mean, I've been trying to think about like why this energy stuff is so hard to combat. And like on some level we can battle with data, but people will sort of believe whatever data they want to believe anyway. But you're exactly right. And I hadn't really thought of it in that way before, but there is so much complexity in this sort of environment energy discussion that it's hard to meme well. Like you can meme banking, you can meme inflation, you can meme sovereignty, all this stuff pretty easily. But like memeing energy grids and the environment and carbon output and all of that of mining is pretty hard to do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's like, it won't land, right? It just won't have the desired impact, the desired message, right? So it won't be encoded properly. And so that's part of the barrier we're feeling right now. I think part of it is that it's a combination of things. It's this perfect storm of obfuscation disaster where there's also been this massive push and this you know, quote unquote kind of green movement, and a sect of it has broken off and really just deemed all electricity consumption, all energy production as like horrible. And we should minimize our electricity consumption, and we should, you know, it's like, which is, I think, is a really dangerous road to go down. It's a really dangerous conversation to have, because you start to talk about, you start to have to weigh whose quality of life is acceptable and worth it, and whose isn't, and in what circumstances should people be able to leverage technology and use electricity. You know what I mean? Like, I really cannot understand those who are like consumption minimalists. I don't know, do they want us to go back to like 1800 and all like burn wood at night in our house? Like there's emissions from that too. Like burning, like, I mean, having 300 million Americans burn wood there's emissions. I don't really understand what their goal is. It sounds to me like for us to revert back to some like dark ages quality of life in the name of saving the planet. I disagree, and I just will not subscribe to that. The other side seemed to be, you know, I think the camp that I'm in certainly is, I believe that electricity production correlates directly with quality of life, right? And I think that there's a lot of data to support me. And I think really ultimately electricity is the tool by which we leverage technology. And if there are emerging societies, emerging communities out there in the world today, which there are, where they don't have access to reliable and affordable electricity, they're not able to leverage technology. They're not able to, I mean, they're left in the past. In many ways, right? They're left to just like die in the past if they don't have affordable and abundant electricity. And if you give them affordable and abundant electricity, watch them begin to thrive, right? It'll take, you know, obviously it takes time, right? It takes, you know, years or decades, but it's really how the quality of life for human beings has been so lifted in the last, you know, 200, 300 years. I mean, electricity is a massive, if not the number one driver of that. And so,
yeah,
you know, I think that Bitcoin's going to be this incentive. It's going to be this carrot out there in the world for people to go out and provide every other human being with affordable and reliable electricity. Because one of the dichotomies, one of the kind of catch-22s that exists with, you know, if you were going to be the guy that goes to invest and you're going to try to bring electricity to an emerging community, right? Well, when you go there initially, say you're going to do like a solar farm or something to provide them, right? Well, you spend all this money and you set up a solar farm. And, you know, get connected and, you know, try to build out or help build out a little bit of their grid system or whatever it may be. But like, you don't have anybody to sell electricity to. Like, they don't have electrical appliances. They're not consuming electricity because they haven't had electricity, right? So you can't even sell them once you start generating it. But now with Bitcoin, you can. You can actually justify erecting that solar farm or that wind farm or tapping into that oil well X amount of, you know, miles away and pipelining gas nearby to have a, you know, compressor station and generate electricity or something. You can mine Bitcoin in the meantime. And then as you build out and as they, you know, develop and they begin to demand electricity, you can mine less Bitcoin, or you can scale up your solar farm, your power generation operation. So like the way I see it is, and it's no longer going to be left to like a tyrant or the goodwill of the Gates Foundation, right? Because the Gates Foundation comes in and does this, and they do it at a loss. And really, like what happens is they end up becoming like, you know, this mafia, right? Like the emerging community is essentially sucking at the teat of the Gates Foundation. They're burning money every year, so it's really not sustainable, but they're able to burn money because they make so much. And like if the Gates Foundation left, nobody else would come in and give them electricity. But now with whoever comes in to do this, if they try to act like a tyrant, like somebody else will come in and provide the electricity and do it more reliably and compete, right? And so like I think it begins to make people play fair, and I think it's going to help incentivize us to go out and take risk to give everyone in the world electricity, because there's going to be a dollar and you're going to be able to make a dollar doing so. And by doing that, I think the benefit to humanity is just going to be immeasurable. Just as much as, I mean, what's the benefit of electricity to humanity right now? It's fucking immeasurable. you know, it's really hard to quantify.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to jump into the Bitcoin Mining Council. So for listeners who I'm sure have heard this all week, Elon Musk, Michael Saylor, and a few other North American mainly mining companies, whether they're pools or they're like hedge funds that have interests in mining or whatnot, a few other parties, made a council of sorts to propose more environmentally safe Bitcoin mining, with like the intention of tracking data and like the sources of the energy itself, which is an interesting idea, and it caught a lot of people off guard and also frustrated a lot of people just because of the name. The council kind of harkens back to some bad memories with Bitcoin, like the Bitcoin Foundation or maybe the New York Agreement in 2017. But then proponents of the idea are saying, hey, this is more about just like providing data for the industry. And Bitcoin mining itself, obviously, over the years, it's like the data has been very opaque, and whether that's a feature or a bug, we can go round and round on that, but that's their idea. So Adam, I want to pitch this to you. Why, or what's your take on this in the first place? And then I would like to hear your take on why Bitcoin goes green eventually, just through market influences, or if that's even the case, like, do we need these kind of institutional moves to make Bitcoin go in the direction everybody wants it to go?
No, we don't. There's a lot to unpack there. Let me say this. Tesla's statement that they came out with about how they didn't want to accept Bitcoin anymore because of the increasing amount of mining that's done with fossil fuels, primarily predominantly coal, I think was their complaint. And that's like that was across the line of, you know, accepting payments was across the line, but holding Bitcoin isn't for some reason. I just want to say that I think that is just nonsensical, and I can't understand how they split hairs like that and say like, oh yeah, we're going to stop accepting transactions because that's what causes, you know, global warming or something, like, because it's powered by coal. It's just really a weird qualification, yeah, I guess, to attribute to Bitcoin. Like, it's just splitting hairs and bizarre. It sounds to me just like a bullshit excuse. But to talk more about the council idea. So I think this. I think that in many ways, what was done, what Michael Saylor kind of brokered, the meeting, and as well as, you know, this idea of a council, I think that ultimately it wasn't done with any malicious intent. I don't think they really had much intent other than to be kind of informative. And ultimately, I don't think it's, no matter what their intent was, even if they had malicious intent, I don't think they could screw up Bitcoin or destroy. Like, I don't think in the grand scheme of things, it's gonna make too much of a difference. I think it was made in good faith to try to, you know, push back against this Bitcoin is bad for the environment narrative, right? To try to say, hey, well, actually, like, let's get some data, let's evaluate it. Where they went wrong is, one, like how they went about it was weird. It was like kind of cryptic. To like kind of announce that they had this, I don't know, like, I mean, at least the optics of it were like that they had this like secret council meeting, right? Like, which everybody's like, what the fuck? That's weird. And this is the other part. The part that really is the crux of the issue here is it's whether or not we kowtow to this moralization of energy production and energy usage, right? Which is, I think, is really a difficult conundrum. And I'm personally struggling with it. right? Because, you know, I work for Upstream Data. I live and breathe every day. I'm dealing with guys who are mitigating, you know, CH4 methane emissions, which is way more environmentally impactful if you're going to even measure environmental impact than anything like carbon dioxide. And, you know, they're taking risk in order to do that because of this thing called Bitcoin. Whereas for the last 100 years with oil wells, they've been burning. Like, there are oil wells out there today that are flaring 25,000 cubic feet of gas, and they've been flaring that since like 92. Like, literally 20 years, 30 years of just sitting there all day, 24/7, just burning gas. And like, there are ways in which the producer could have, you know, I mean, he could combust that gas, right? He could essentially just like combust it and run it into the ground, right? Just waste the electricity. But it would cost him money to do that. Like, he had to buy an engine, and then he has to maintain that engine. And like, you know, the engine could have, you know, break and needs maintenance. And so, like, it would cost him money to do that. And obviously, they're not going to do that unless, like, there's some kind of it's economically sustainable for them to do that, right? On the margin. And Bitcoin is the first thing since the discovery of oil that, like, allows for the flexibility to just even sell a little bit of gas. Like, you can sell just 1,000 cubic feet or 1,000,000 cubic feet in a day. Like, you can, Bitcoin's really flexible that way. You can shut off the mines, like, the well can go down, and it's not like you're running a Microsoft, you know, data center where if your well goes down, like, a whole bunch of customers, their freaking phones don't work. And so, you know, it's like this perfect tool for this, and it ought to be celebrated. And it gets them to spend money to mitigate their emissions, to mitigate their environmental impact. I think that ought to be celebrated. I don't know how anybody can claim that that's something, you know, like, bad or environmentally negative in its entirety. It certainly begs the conversation of, hey, when people are calculating, like, you know, how much gasoline is burned every Bitcoin transaction, like, are they accounting for this? Like, are they accounting for our Bitcoin mines? Are they accounting for our customers, the guys that are mitigating, you know, methane emissions in order to mine Bitcoin? Because you'd think that would, you know, that would edge the calculation one direction, right? Or are they just assuming that everybody's mining on like a coal fire plant that was shut down until the miners came to town? Like, you know, like, that's this weird basic assumption that is just inherently flawed. And so to give into that, to subscribe to this idea that, and honestly, I have a hard time subscribing to the idea that carbon dioxide is destroying the planet. Like I have a hard time going that far to saying, like, yeah, we should, like the way in which they're measuring carbon and like a business's carbon emissions is really arbitrary, man. It's like to try to actually get the precise number of what a carbon impact is. I mean, like, you have to try to account for the employees, how many breaths they take, for fuck's sake. Like, I mean, seriously, like, what are we talking about here? Like, do they exercise on the premise? Because that's going to be more carbon dioxide. Like, you know, I mean, seriously, what are we talking about here? And are we going to get to that point in this world where this carbon credit system that is, I mean, I don't know if people really understand how the carbon credit system works, but it's totally ridiculous. It's like, if you're a business and you prove that you reduce your carbon emissions, then you get these credits, and then you can take those credits and you can go sell them to companies. And some companies have to buy those in order to maintain carbon neutrality. So, like, they literally are just buying the title of carbon neutrality. Like, they're not actually, and like, these carbon credits were made and facilitated by the government. I don't know if they're supposed to be backed by like an acre of planted trees or something, or like, well, no, but seriously, what's the government doing to actually take fucking carbon out of the environment? Like, I have no idea. Are they planting trees? Cause that's like pretty much one of the most efficient ways to do it. Is to plant forests worth of trees. And
maybe Watts Miner should just start a promotion where every ASIC they sell gets a tree planted in South America.
Hey, I told Steve Barber this. I said, hey man, every one of our customers, we should plant a tree next to the oil well. And then we'll make some carbon statement about it. But that's the thing too, is, you know, us at Upstream, we could really, you know, we could push the narrative of how, I mean, like, we're carbon friggin' negative for all intents and purposes, like, by their measurements. But we think, like, I think, at least personally, I think their measurements are kind of ridiculous. And I'm not sure that they are truly a good measure of an environmental impact, a negative impact. And I think it's being, there's been a lot of people taking advantage of the carbon credit system. And there's been a lot of, I don't know if I would call it manipulation, but, you know, I guess advantageous, you know, people taking advantage of all the benefits, you know, and to the point where, you know, the incentives are just all screwed up, where Bitcoin kind of helps that. Like, Bitcoin is one of those things where you don't even need regulators to come in and tell the oil and gas companies to stop flaring gas. Like, the oil and gas companies are going to stop flaring gas because it's in their best interest. which is way more effective than, you know, literally like pointing the power of the government at the company and saying, you have to do this, or we're going to fine you, or we're going to tax you, or we're going to shut you down. So I don't know. I think Elon Musk's kind of statement, I get why they maybe made the council. I think they went about it in a really bad way. The announcement of it was really bad. Ultimately, what are they doing? They're building a council to what? Virtue signal in some ways. Like they want to get together, get a whole bunch of data together and talk about how most of Bitcoin is done next to windmills and solar panels and rivers. And it's like, okay, but like, it doesn't matter if Bitcoin is mined with excess hydrocarbons, like it's still a really good thing. Like, and it's still like an empowerment and environmental benefit. So I don't know. It just feels like they're being intellectually dishonest, and either they're intentionally omitting or being, you know, acting intentionally ignorant to some of the ways in which people are mining Bitcoin, because they certainly didn't, I mean, Tesla didn't mention anything about how waste energy is being used. I mean, like how it's excess energy oftentimes that's being consumed. You know, it's not like every time someone plugs in a Bitcoin miner, like they have to shovel more coal into the damn fire. Like, I mean, it's like Henry Suttuck says it really well. He's like, yeah, but when someone plugs in a Bitcoin miner, it's not like the turbine has to spin one more time. Like the electricity is already there. You're setting a basis of demand. Everywhere in which there's grid electricity, we're producing for peak demand, and peak demand happens, you know, every so often. And so like, that's the problem. People don't understand the complexity of kind of how electricity is produced and distributed, what it looks like, what kind of impact, you know, what kind of things impact what. So they really have no idea how Bitcoin mining fits in. And it's long form education. That's the problem, is it? Like you can't bottle this, right? It's really tough to bottle this into, I mean, you can kind of maybe bottle into like 90 seconds or a minute, but these days, I mean, that's almost sometimes too long for people to pay attention to.
Yeah, but you know, it's Bitcoiners, right? So everyone's an expert at cryptography, distributed systems, and probably energy.
What was it? Everyone became a master on convertible senior notes, like in 12 minutes, the day that MicroStrategy offered them to buy Bitcoin. Everybody just is like talking about convertible senior notes, like they always talk about it. Like it's the first time we all heard the word.
It's just exactly how it goes. So we only got a few minutes left here, but I want to ask you about something that's probably the most interesting aspect about what Upstream does to me, which is decentralizing Bitcoin mining. So we always have this idea of decentralizing the node count on the Bitcoin system, of course, which is very important. We want not only geographically distributed, but distributed in internet connections. And then even to a degree, like you have different types of nodes, like full nodes. You try not to have like light clients or anything like that. But now we have Bitcoin mining being very distributed just because of the infrastructure. Like if you can just plop a miner down on a random oil field in Western Canada and then just start hashing away, that adds another level of complexity for attackers trying to take down the Bitcoin space. And then you can start getting stuff like Stratum V2 and things really start cooking where you just like every single layer of Bitcoin is extremely decentralized and the attack service decreases. So I want to know what you guys think about that. Of course, you said before you're more of an oil and gas company first and then a Bitcoin company second. So maybe that's not something that's like in the ethos of the company, but maybe it is. So I just want to leave it there and see what you think about it.
No, I definitely think it's in the ethos of the company. I mean, we're definitely Bitcoiners, right? I mean, I think Steve would consider himself a Bitcoiner, but, you know, it's one of the parts that excites me the most too. You know, when in 2018, when I first got on the phone with Steve, you know, I absolutely begged him to not only like hire me, right? I was like, I'll work for free. I begged him if I could invest with him. You know, I thought the same thing, because that's kind of where I was coming from, is I saw how powerful one this was, how beneficial it was going to be to oil and gas producers, right? This benefits them in way more ways than just they get to make some money on this stuff that they were wasting now. Like it goes a lot deeper than that. And it's really substantial. But I saw how it was gonna empower Bitcoin. And in many ways, it doesn't just decentralize, like geographically decentralize mining and bring it off grid, right? Where the US grid could get attacked, right? Hackers could, you know, do some crap to grid operators, and people could be having all sorts of issues. We're, you know, our customers are still mining Bitcoin. Like they're completely unaffected. And so I think the more hash rate that's off grid, the better for Bitcoin. Just like I think the more satellites in space that are passing an updated, you know, version of the blockchain. The more full nodes in outer space and all over the place, the better. The cool thing about this is that it makes it like Bitcoin is relatively right now, currently. I mean, if you wanted to have a try to do a, some kind of a global coordinated attack to knock down a significant percentage of the hash rate so that maybe you could come on with your own hash rate and you could try to behave maliciously with it or something, right? And you know, for all what it's worth, I don't think they'd be successful. But say you did, I think one of the main, I think it might be possible today for like a, an entity like the U.S. government to coordinate something like that. It'd be massive. It'd be insane. It would be like, you know, the biggest operation ever kind of a thing, or at least, you know, and it'd be really impossible to, for them to keep that, you know, hidden and not like in the news. But I think it maybe is possible in 18 months, even like, I think that with the amount of data centers in the oil field, it's like all of a sudden no longer feasible. I mean, it's really no longer feasible because countries are waking up to this too. Nation states are waking up to this. I mean, Iran is mining with their hydrocarbons. Venezuela is mining with their hydrocarbons. Russia, same thing. I mean, out they're out in, I mean, Russia's got so much natural gas out in Siberia that they can't pipeline to market. And so, you know, the biggest oil and gas producer in Russia, who's a, it's like a, you know, a state conglomerate, if you will, but if they were their partner with the state, they announced last year that they were mining Bitcoin. So, you know, it's, this is happening. It's going to make Bitcoin just a utterly, utterly defensible, right? Impenetrable, from a hash rate point of view. But really I think nodes are the most important. I'd say it's much more important that nodes get decentralized and become plentiful than it is Bitcoin miners become decentralized and plentiful. Yeah. And the good news is that it's like a lot cheaper and easier to run a node than it is to mine, I think. So,
yeah,
it's like $120. You know, Raspi, and like it's just a little fan blowing in the corner of the room rather than, you know, a freaking vacuum cleaner from 1986. That's what these damn miners sound like. They scream sometimes. Yeah, they scream
hot.
One other thing I did want to touch on that in terms of that question, I just wanted to say was, you know, I think at the end of the day, with this council and such, like, you know, it's kind of fun to throw shade on Twitter and to you know, get people worked up and you know, also it's kind of fun to act like it's more triggering than it really is. Like ultimately I'm not upset by it, but I gave them a bunch of crap. Just because I think it's funny that there's even this discussion about miners getting together and doing some kind of coordinated agreement or like accord of sorts. And one interesting thing, and one thing about it that I think is kind of worth noting, and the part that I would say is worth saying that the meeting was kind of bullshit, is that Mara, freaking Marathon, I mean, weren't they the ones that just recently talked about mining a clean block or something, like a block with only transactions that were approved by their committee of sorts or whatever the fuck, right? And so like, are we trying to, is that what they're trying to do? We're trying to Trojan horse this social governance of like, okay, what, is there going to be this list of, you know, acceptable addresses and unacceptable or unverified addresses? And, you know, if you mine a block and you include those transactions that are, you know, unverified, like you're going to be shamed by, or you're going to be taxed higher on your Bitcoin mining earnings or some shit. Like, I mean, I wonder how they're going to try to fucking, they're going to try to do something here, right? They're going to try to get control. That's what they always do, is that everyone that gets involved in Bitcoin and gains any kind of power, any kind of value growth, right, which is mostly everybody that hangs around, it's like they all begin to try to control it, and they start to fight really hard when they, no matter how powerful they get, they can't control Bitcoin. And so then they get to this point where they have to get together, right? They have to get other people who think they're powerful, and then all of us together, then Bitcoin will listen to them. Bitcoin's not going to fucking listen to them either, you know, until the consensus, until the entirety of the network gets together and says, yeah, this is worth having consensus on. It's not going to care. And so I think that they're just, you know, it's good to write a news story about it. Oh yeah, Michael, billionaires are getting together and having, you know, talking about putting together Bitcoin mining councils. And, you know, I'm sure there's somebody out there, I tweeted about that. I'm sure there's somebody out there that's just dying to be like the first chairperson of that council. Like they just want it so bad. Like, please, Mr. Musk, let me be the chairperson. You know, but like, it's a freaking joke. It's a fiat council, that doesn't have any authority over shit.
Yeah, get rid of your chairs. No, I definitely agree. There's some interesting optics around it. I think at the end of the day, everyone wants sustainable Bitcoin mining, but it can't come at the cost of destroying energy consumption. Energy leads to a lot of blessings in life, and just like chopping that off is like cutting off your own arm. Makes absolutely no sense to do it.
So, yeah, it's like chopping off the arm that's holding the knife.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Absolutely strange. But yeah, that's a wrap for us, I think, here. So, hey, Adam, awesome. Thanks for coming on the show. Really interesting work you guys are doing at Upstream. Where can people find your platform, your Twitter, or where you write, or Upstream itself?
Yeah, I'd say definitely check out upstreamdata.ca. Check out Upstream Data's website. And then on Twitter, I'm Denver Bitcoin. And you can, I think I've got a link on there to a Medium page where I've got some articles that I've written and some podcasts I've done. But really check out Upstream Data. They're doing the cool stuff. Check out, other guys in the space that are doing it as well. You know, Great American Mining, they're doing some cool stuff. Midstream is another company that's out there mining on flare gas and trying to mitigate this emissions issue. And so I think there's a lot of, 21st century wildcatters that are out there trying to find Bitcoin in the middle of nowhere at an oil well, and yeah, solve a problem while, being able to earn Bitcoin while solving a problem. And I think it's a cool thing. It's weird that the bummer that they get vilified, and I'm happy to come and speak in their defense.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, well, thank you. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks so much.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.